everybody. This is Andy Marquette. I am joined by my colleague and friend, Joe Fell. We are Women and Words. Hi, Joe.
Hi. How are you?
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Just tell us a story.
Oh.
No, you don't have one?
No, I mean, you know, stories happen, but. Yeah. No, I got nothing.
Y'all, it's early. It's early in the morning because the internet was being stupid yesterday. So we're kind of in the process of waking up. But anyway, we are Women in Words. This is the podcast that tells you all about the things happening on the Women in Words blog and a lot of other things, too, that are probably unnecessary. But we like to talk about them. So there you go. Mm-hmm, that's what we're doing here in our own special way.
Yes.
All right, so should we just like jump into this, and then when you get a story later on, like, you'll stop me and go, I have a story now.
You know what? I have never once hesitated to just talk about whatever the fuck I felt like. So yeah, I think I'll do that.
All right, sweet. Okay, everybody. March 11th. Look at us. Look at us starting. Like, what is happening?
I don't know.
Here?
It feels weird.
It feels weird.
Yeah.
Shit. Wait, maybe I have. Oh, I do. I have a story. How, oh. We got to do this or we're going to be off our rhythm. Okay. You know what I'm saying?
I like it when you tell stories.
Okay. Well, sometimes, you know, I don't know what happens. It's just a story. So last night I was running around on the Twitters, as one does. And one of the people I follow is this woman who's an attorney, and I think she's based in New York, but regardless, she's fucking hilarious. She doesn't use her real name, and that's cool. But she's really funny. So she started like this Twitter thread, and I just happened to run across it, and I'm like, oh God, I have to find out how this story plays out. Because she was live tweeting, she was at a bar, and she was watching a Tinder date going bad.
Oh, wow.
Right? And so it's like, oh hell. So everybody starts like, all her followers are like, oh yeah. And they're like, you know, posting the gifts with the popcorn eating, like, what's next, you know? And so she's like following this saga. She's like, there's a woman, she's in her 40s, there's a dude, he's in his 50s, and she's like, this is not going to end well. She's like, she's drinking Sex on the Beach, he's drinking Malibu and Coke, Diet Coke, and like, he's constantly, all he's doing is talking about sports with the bartender. And I was like, oh no, this is not going to end well. So then he gets up and he leaves, like, ostensibly to go to the bathroom. And the woman kind of looks around at all the people gathered at the bar, seven, the attorney said. And she's like, well, this isn't going well. And the attorney tweets, and, like, as if we were all involved in some secret pact, we all pretended we didn't know that. And so turns out The guy is on the back patio smoking and playing Candy Crush on his phone for like 15 minutes. So clearly the date's not going well. He comes back in after the bar patrons convince this woman to like just order an appetizer, eat it, and get the fuck out. So he comes back, and then like a few minutes later, this other woman shows up, and the attorney goes, well, clearly this was his other Tinder date who showed up a little earlier.
Oh, wow.
So there's like these two women and this dude now, and the original woman, you know, they get the appetizer and they're eating, and, you know, they have this other woman there to start talking, and apparently they all start like getting along. And then the original woman is like, well, you know, y'all, I have some Xanax. And the guy's like, his eyes like light up. And so they finish the appetizer and they all leave together in an Uber.
Well, good for them.
So the attorney goes, that was rather anticlimactic. And so I was like, no, I tweeted then, no, here's what happened. This is the fanfic continuation. They get to his apartment and the two women totally have hustled him. They steal his wallet and his watch and they leave him on the floor after they Xanax him up in his apartment.
Well,
because they knew each other ahead of time.
Those aren't very nice women though.
It's a hustle. It was hilarious. That's Oh my God. So she's like, okay. She was like, that was hilarious. So anyway, this is why I run around on the Twitters, friends, because I find stories like that. I mean, how could you not want to know what happens with that?
You know, I used to do something similar to that, only in real life. I'd go out with my best gay friend Patrick, who was this super queer Hawaiian dude, and we'd go and we'd people watch and make up stories for everybody. We did
See?
that. Yeah.
See? But I mean, I love, I mean, this is so, maybe this is rude, but this isn't the first time that people I follow have live tweeted other people's bad dates. And I think there should be like a whole series or something, or some kind of like, I don't know, some collection somewhere of, bad dates live tweeted, or like, because some of the stories I've read are so, they're funny, but they're cringeworthy, but they're funny, right? Because you can just see this date going badly, and you're just like, oh God, get out, honey. Get out now. Thank
Run
you.
now.
Run now while you have the chance, while he's in the bathroom. And the thing that's funny is that the most cringeworthy dates are usually, and this is sad, are usually male female, and it's usually the guy being a real dick. There have been a few live tweeting dates of like female female I've seen that have gone bad, and male male that have gone bad, but the overwhelming majority of these live tweeting dates are male female.
Well, I don't think I understand. What's it? What is it? What's the app?
Tinder,
Tinder. I don't
that's
think
one of
I,
them.
yeah, I don't think I understand it properly because, if isn't the goal just to like hook up? Like people aren't on
Well,
there
sure. I
actually
mean,
dating, right? Like it's just.
well, yeah, but you don't want to just show up at somebody's house before you actually meet them.
Because
So
that
you go
person could
out
be
for
a
a
serial
drink
killer.
first. Right. You go out for a drink first to see if, yeah, you do want to, do the deed.
Okay.
I mean, that's just smart in this day and age. You don't want to be like, oh, where do you live? And then just show some, especially if you're a single woman, you certainly don't want some unknown man coming to your apartment
Well, I
or
just,
going to his place.
what are you
You
going to
want to
get out
like
of,
scope out first.
what are you going to get out of 35 minutes at a bar drinking that you wouldn't have got? Do you know what I just don't understand. Why not just go
You're gonna get
straight
good
to it?
vibes.
Oh, well, they didn't get good vibes and still went home together.
Well,
So.
we don't know what they did. See, that's the thing. That's why I filled it in with the hustle, because I think that would have been a much better story.
They got in the same Uber together. They went somewhere to do something.
No, you can share a ride with Uber, and the Uber acts like a bus and drops people off at various spots. But in this particular instance, it does seem that they were all going to do something with the Xanax. I, however, prefer to think of it that these two women knew each other and they hustled him.
You know what all of this establishes is that I'm old and it has been way too long since I've hooked up with somebody random because I don't even know how it works in this world.
There were a few comments in that thread. One guy said, I don't even understand modern dating. I'm so glad I'm married.
That's it because I have no idea. Like the last time I hooked up with somebody random, it didn't involve any of these things. Well, it did involve a bar,
There you go.
but they're just I'm mind blown. Thank you for introducing me to 21st century dating
Well,
practices.
I know, right? And the two people, the original daters, were our age bracket. So,
Oh, well, I, yeah, no, clearly it's not because I said it was because I'm old. It's not. It's because I've spent half my life in a relationship. So, yeah. All right. Thanks for the education.
anyway, they're modern dating practices, people. It's definitely not like it used to be.
Yeah, this sounds is like an archaeological event. Like I'm learning.
I don't even know. Like if I started dating, I don't even know how I would go about it. I just what I because I don't use apps like that because like we were just talking about. I mean, that's kind of creepy to me. So
Hey,
like that makes me old, I guess. Oh
you're not
well.
allowed to just start dating. I think your girlfriend would object.
No, absolutely. But if something, if I were in that position, and I would just probably be single the rest of my life because I really don't know how to do it. I'm clueless. I just, yeah. So anyway, I am completely clueless. I mean,
You're pretty smart, though. I think you'd figure it out if you needed
I've
to.
ended up in situations, friends, by accident. Like, it's not like I live in my head all the time, and I have absolutely no idea when somebody is interested in me. None. I'm just like, la, 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 in my own world. And it's amazing that I actually have managed to date and hook up in the past. It really is, because I'm just like, do, 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 going about my business, and I just have no clue. I am just one of those. I can see it in other people, but I have no clue when it comes to me. Just none.
Oh, wow.
It's weird.
That is, I don't even know what to say to that.
It's like, yeah, and it's something that is laughable. And it's true. I do laugh about it. Like, you know, I'll be out with friends and be like, ooh, that woman was scoping you out. And I'm like, huh, what? Oh, the one I talked to? What are you talking about? Oh, she was interested. I'm like, what?
We were just having some words. It was fine.
Yeah, exactly. It was fine. Like, what are you talking about? Like,
so. All right.
Anyway, I get teased a lot about that. So.
Well, it's okay.
Whatever. It is what it is. Anyway, okay. Modern dating. Ugh,
so not for the faint of heart.
There. It is not for the faint of heart. God, that would actually be funny to do I have an idea for a short story now, friends, but I'm not going to tell you what the idea is. Anyway, okay, March 11th, Jessie Chandler joined us. Yay, Jessie! And I love when she does these little interviews with other authors. She mm-hmm. did one here, and it's with Sandra DeHellen, and it's about Sandra's latest release of poetry. Sandra writes, oh my God, I don't know if there's anything she doesn't write. She writes plays, she writes poems, she writes mysteries. I mean, she basically just writes everything across the board. And this particular collection of poems is called Desire Returns for a Visit, and it's intimate poems about lesbian love. How could you not want to read that? I'm just, you know, putting that out there.
I think everybody should want to read that.
I agree. It covers all phases of lesbian love relationships, from coming out to falling in love, grappling with relationships, living and ending them. That's kind of sad. But it's true. It's part of the cycle of relationships. And so, it's being put out by Launchpoint Publications.
Which is owned by our friend Lori L. Lake.
Yes. And if you would like to get a review copy of this, Jessie supplied a link. You can click it to contact Launchpoint to get a review copy, which is super cool. So, anyway, Sandra says she's best known as a playwright. She's been writing plays and having them produced, friends, since 1976.
Wow.
I mean, I've met playwrights, but I've never actually met playwrights who've been consistently produced. I mean, that's kind of amazing. She wrote her, she has a female Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson mystery series. How about that?
I like that.
I like that a lot. I'm going to find, I forgot what the name of it is, but she always participates in the Hootenanny. And I never remember to continue looking her up. I suck as a researcher right now. What?
It's okay. Okay.
Do you think so?
Well, no, yeah. But, you know, whatever.
Here it is, The Hounding. That's what it is. The book one of the Shirley Combs and Dr. Mary Watson series. Shirley Combs, private investigator and her sidekick. Okay, so that, and then there's book two is The Illustrious Client. So that's fun.
Yeah, that's a great title for that genre. Like it's very, you know, noir kind of, you know.
Yeah, yeah. So very cool.
Yeah.
I know that a lot of people, you're probably sitting there going, ew, poetry. But let me tell you something. When you get a good poem, there's something really, really kind of liberating and cool about reading one. It's sort of like a vignette or even a short story condensed into like, you know, 100, 200 words. And to be a poet, that's an art form that is really, I mean, it's amazing. It's something that not very many people do well. I mean, yeah. Sure, we've written bad poems. I myself have written bad poetry. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I'm not a huge fan of poetry, but I have part of a poem tattooed on my arm, right? So I get it. It's just not something that I remember to seek out.
Mm-hmm.
That's all.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Well, exactly. Because it's not part of a lot of people's, it's not on their radar. They're like novels, short stories, sure. But a lot of people, they don't just, you know, go out and read plays. And they don't just write plays. And they don't just read poems or write poems, which is too bad because those are both really interesting forms of writing. And reading a play is sort of like reading a script, you know, a movie script. And so, you know, because you're reading the dialogue and then they've got like the stage directions. My mom actually was a, I suppose she still is, but she hasn't done it in a while. She's a director. And so she would like, you know, put together the scripts with the directions and arrange people and stuff. And so I would read those because I thought it was interesting to see how, what her vision was for that scene. And in some ways, I think that's how I kind of write novels. I can see the scene in my head and I sort of position the characters and what they're doing and spatially how close they are. And I don't know. So I think it's a useful exercise to read plays and poems. I'm just putting it out there to broaden our horizons.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. It's, you know, it goes to the idea that, you know, as an author, you should read lots of other things that are in your genre and not, because it's just part of honing your craft. So yeah, absolutely.
Right.
You know, I am going to a play this weekend, tomorrow, Sunday. And I'm taking Noah and young Michael and my friend's oldest daughter, Bryn, because she is an actress. And we're going to go watch this movie called, what is it called? She Kills Monsters.
It's a play?
It's a play, yeah. Yep. And it's...
What's it about?
It's about a woman who is learning about her younger sister who is... dead through a D&D journal that she found.
And, oh my God, that sounds so interesting.
And she learns that her sister was queer. So there you go. It's got all manner of queerness going on.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm like really loving that.
Yeah, I'm excited to see it. I think my kids will really benefit from it. They're excited. It's all good. Yeah,
tomorrow
we're going to the Sunday matinee show, and I'm excited that we're taking Bryn. This is the first time I've taken Bryn to do anything like we've known them since Bryn was like little. One of my favorite photos shows Bryn and Wyatt walking down a path together, like we'd gone camping, and they're like 6 years old, holding hands, walking down this path. It's adorable. But yeah, so I'm excited that we're gonna, that, you know, I get to do that. Because, you know, it's important to, yeah.
Yeah.
And Noah's obviously excited because he's always been into plays and stuff like that. And I don't know if, I don't know if Michael's into it or not because that kid is very buttoned up, but hopefully he'll have a good time.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to just get out and about and do different things, you know, and to expose kids to different things like that. So, anyway, Jesse and Sandra, thank you so much for joining us on Women in Words. And remember, you can click this link to contact Launch Point Press if you would like a review copy of Sandra DeHellen's latest lesbian poems, Desire Returns, for a visit.
Yes, please.
That was cool. Love it. Yeah.
Yep, okay. Yep.
Thank you. Okay, March 12th, Angela Grace joined us, Jove, and tell everybody who Angela is.
Angela is my friend. Wait, there's more to it than that. Angela, wait,
there's more. Hold on.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Angela is a psychiatrist, a licensed, you know, I say psychiatrist. I don't actually know what her degree is. She has letters that she puts after her name. She's a therapist. She's a licensed life coach, and just an all-around kind, super-duper human being. There you go.
This is that's awesome. So, and, you know, she stops by Women in Words, and she does, like, these cool blogs about life and how to live it, and, you know, little lessons that we can learn and how to delve into our own bullshit and figure out what we should be doing, like, which is always useful for me, dear listeners.
Yeah, she's super helpful like that. Like, you know, she thinks of real world problems and real world solutions.
Right. So. And which is cool. It's like she'll give you a scenario and then bring it back to like what you could learn from something like that. And I find that a really excellent approach because so many people are adverse to, you use the term buttoned up like that. They're adverse to exploring, you know, things that are going on with themselves and others. And they're scared. It is scary to start excavating yourself. But when she uses like these examples of like the real world things or things that have happened to her, then you sort of like kind of loosen up and you're like, you can see how that applies to your own life without being put in a position where you're in your fight or flight, like, ah, no therapy, I can't, it's too scary, like that.
Yeah. I am one of those who really just has no interest in, I'm buttoned up. I think that's what I'm saying. So, and Angela is incredibly easy to confide in. She's she's very easy to chat with.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there are things that I, too, get really weird about and don't want to discuss. And I get, you know, you get that little clench in your chest and you're just like, no. And you feel like you get really defensive and you maybe knee jerk. And that's when I know that it's probably something I need to look at. Because if I'm that uptight about even talking about it, chances are I need to talk about it.
Yeah, I'm not saying I don't need to talk about my shit. I'm saying I don't want to.
That's a legit thing, too. I mean, but it's on everybody to figure out what approach they want to take. So anyway, point being, this week's lesson is another personal journey of Angela's and her wife. Her wife was diagnosed with diabetes about 10 years ago. And so the two of them have undertaken this journey to develop health and eating plans that work, you know? And it's taken them, like, it's been really frustrating. If you read this blog, it's been really a frustrating kind of thing. And they, you know, did what they thought were all the right things through the American Diabetes Association, trying this diet, trying that diet, you know, doing the with the strips, the glucose checking levels. So finally they kept doing this until Angela's wife was like, I'm done. I'm done with the ADA, the American Diabetes Association. And she was experiencing complications that created unnecessary stress. So Angela says the ADA methods didn't seem to be working well. Her glucose was stable, but overall it wasn't getting much lower. So her wife decided she's going to go a different way. So last year, Angela's cousin Amy is a doctor at the Mayo Clinic. And she was in a, this is, you know, this ends okay, friends, but she was in a really bad car accident. And what happened was Amy had, you know, a lot of time while she was recovering, you know, recovering. So that's the good part. And Angela told her about the dilemma with trying to figure out how to help control the glucose levels and live happily within this diabetes diagnosis. And Amy said, you know, I'm going to educate you on food. And so Angela's like, well, why food? Because diabetes is a dietary disease. If you feed your body the correct foods, blood glucose will lower to the point where your body is no longer being damaged. So they've worked with Amy now for 6 months. And in that time, Angela's wife's blood sugar averages around 120. And I'm not sure. Damage starts around 170. So she's, you know, below that damage range. It's not, her levels are not where they need to be just yet, but they're hopeful, and her wife has lost weight and she's gained energy. So this new approach has really helped them figure out the next steps in their journey living with this condition. And I mean, how great is that? You know, there's a path now. My wife calls Amy her curative consultant. I call her a miracle. So you just, you never know, you know, where you're going to find the inspiration or the angels in your life, you know, there's to help you deal with a problem that you've been working on for a long time and it's just not working.
Yeah, it's interesting that the solution was, you know, talking to somebody who's been in her life her entire life. you know what I mean? Right. Like, we forget to look for the wisdom with the people that, you know, we already know.
Exactly. And I mean, I'm so, you know, I really hope that Amy has indeed recovered, you know, from this horrible accident and that she's able to go back to work and do doctor things. But in the meantime, she was doing doctor things with her cousin, which, you know, so even though she was in recovery from this awful situation, she was still able to help people. Mm-hmm. I would like to meet Amy, actually. She sounds really amazing.
Yes, she does. Which only makes sense because Angela and her wife are both just fabulous human beings. So I'm in favor of this story.
I am. Yes. And friends, I guess if you are dealing with diabetes, I guess you could contact Angela.
Oh, I'm sure she'd respond. Yeah, she's kind like that.
You know, but it sounds to me like maybe what they and Amy could do is, and maybe this is something Amy would want to do, is like, you know how you get those guides, you know, mm-hmm. how to manage your whatever. Maybe she could do something like that for diabetes, you know?
Maybe Angela and Amy could decide that they would like to do a podcast about it. I'm just saying.
Oh my God, that could be really interesting.
Podcasts are the best.
They're the best, and there's so much information you can get from them, like mm-hmm. you're getting right now from the two of us. Not really. You're not getting any information.
No.
You're just hanging out with us. Y'all hang out with us, and that is fine. We love you for it.
They're getting information about how amazing Amy is and Angela is. So.
And her wife. Yeah. Dar. So.
Yes, Dar is amazing.
Dar's, yeah. I have not met Dar. I've met Angela. So anyway, if you're dealing with something like that, Angela supplies her email address right there. You can drop her a line and see what's going on. And I do know that for some people, there are different types of diabetes. And there's like, you know, the kind that you have to like really freaking monitor. Then there's the kind that you can monitor that doesn't require as much work. But it's always something that you have to really, really focus on because diabetes can be a devastating diagnosis depending on what stage and what level. And it sadly, it's like, I was talking to my doctor and it's something that, especially as we age, that we all have to be aware of because it's something that I guess it gets more common as you age.
Yeah.
Is that true? Am I?
Yes.
Or did I pull that out of my ass?
Nope. That was not an ass pull. That's accurate.
Because, so basically, once you live long enough, you're going to get something.
Yeah, well, and type 2 diabetes is, I mean, as Americans, our diets are...
Shit.
Yeah, our diets are designed to, you know, cultivate type 2 diabetes, which is, you know, not good.
Not good at all. And we see, like, rampant diabetes diagnosis on, like, indigenous reservations because colonization forced them into situations in which they don't have access to their traditional foods mm-hmm. and to their traditional diets. And so, you know, you're eating like this horrifically bad food for you. So diabetes is out of control and there are like organizations and things set up on reservations to help deal with this problem because literally the food, and it's like Amy and Angela point out, your food can be a source of health and it can fucking kill you if you're eating the wrong kinds. Mm-hmm. So that's why it's important to pay attention to your diets, friends. You may be thinking, damn it, I've been like working out all the time and I'm still not losing weight. Well, have a look at what you're eating.
Mm-hmm.
And your portion.
What a clever idea.
I know, but it takes some of us a while to figure that shit out. Anyway. Thanks, Angela. That was really great. And I'm so glad you and Dar are doing so much better.
Yeah. Me
That's
too.
Awesome. That's awesome. Okay. Phew. Next up, March 13th, Val joined us. And Val sometimes like ponders writing. And that's what she did with this one. She started writing through fan fiction. Val writes Kurosami fan fiction. And there are many writing don'ts that she's encountered. And Jove, you and I can talk to a lot of that.
Like, yeah.
Like all the writing don'ts. Like that, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. So, you know, the hard-learned pacing issue, you know.
Pacing is hard.
Pacing is hard. She says, in the beginning, I've written some truly terrible one-shots that were barely 500 words and should have been in the thousands if I wanted to tell the story correctly.
That's okay. People just know what you're talking about, right? There's no reason to actually tell the story.
I know, right? Then there's the dreaded one-voice ensemble where every character sounds like the same person. The dialogue mm-hmm. is just pages and pages of characters all saying the same thing, whatever the author was preaching or trying to sell to us at the time. My favorite don't that I've encountered is the over-explainer. Oh, would that be categorized as info dumping?
Sounds like it.
Yeah. Every dialogue tag came with reasoning to justify the words, no matter how obvious or banal the conversation on the page. A 2,000-word chapter had maybe a couple hundred viable words, and the rest were useless as a knife in a gunfight. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. I'm thinking of my early work. And, yes, some of the work that I do now. Yes, indeedy. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, my God. So then Val's point is that here she's talking about bad writing of children characters. And Jove, you know this. It is hard to write kids well.
It is hard to write kids well.
You know.
Mostly because people get the ages wrong. Like, they have a 12-year-old act like they're four. You know, mm-hmm. stuff like that. Like, if you don't spend any time around children, don't try to write about children because you will get it wrong. Yeah.
Yeah. And she points out kids are fussy, even perfect ones. Kids are so messy. Mm-hmm. They throw tantrums. They throw off plans and have enough wrenches to wreck a gear factory. Kids are people, mm-hmm. not preachers and enablers. I don't think we give them enough credit in our depictions of children. We have to let them be obstacles and forces to be reckoned with. We have to let them want things a child would want. And we also have to respect that no matter how silly that want is, it's important to them as our wants are to us.
Yeah.
And oh man, the baby talk has got to go. It doesn't have a function 99.99999% of the time. Kids have quirks and tics, and even things that don't make sense to us mean something to them, at the very least to the extent that they want to share it.
It's all true.
It's hard writing kids for me because I don't spend a lot of time around them.
Well, you know, here's the thing. I think my kids are pretty fucking easy, and they still make me want to throw things out the window. I have amazing children, though, sincerely. Like, they are great, great, great kids, and I still, they're hard. Parenting is hard. Kids are hard. So there.
Yeah, they are hard. They're hard. It's hard to write. It's hard to, they're just difficult. It's like, oh my God.
Yes. Oh my God. And we always want to, as adults, I think we always want to underage them. So we want a 15-year-old to be acting like a 10-year-old and a 10-year-old to be acting like a 4-year-old. And, you know, it's a 15-year-old in this world is drinking, is probably experimenting with drugs. At the very least, smoking pot. Yeah, definitely having sex. You know, the whole idea of what's important to a 15-year-old. Yes, they're interested in, you know, sports and activities and school and all of those things, but they're living in a very real adult themed world, and we want to, you know, have them act like they're 10. And guess what? 10-year-olds in this world are interested in all of those things and may or may not be doing them for real.
Mm-hmm. It feels like we sort of, like, I don't know, is this a word? I'm gonna just make it up, that they childize children. I mean,
infantilize.
Thank you. Infantilize. That's what I'm saying. That's the word I wanted. It especially in writing. And mm-hmm. And Val's right. It's hard to find realistically written kids in fiction. Now, the authors that are doing really good YA, I think, you know, they capture those age ranges really well. But kids, writing like young kids, like between 3 and 8, that's like a trouble slot for me. I have no fucking idea how to appropriately write kids like that at that age.
Yeah, and if you don't spend time with them, I'm not saying don't write them, but do the fucking research, just like anything else. I mean, everybody knows somebody who has a kid, right?
Don't right, we ask all them to know read somebody? Your stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I have like, kids. They scare legit. The hell out of me.
Right. Just be like, hey, I have this kid character in here who's 5, and your kids are 7, and you went through the 5 with them. Can you read this and make sure that I've got it right?
Yeah, and, if it's a person who wants to read something, they will be very excited to be included.
Yeah, the point is that use your resources to make sure you're getting these characters right. And because, it is kind of maddening to see, 5-year-olds acting like they're 15, 15-year-olds acting like they're 5, which is not to suggest that that doesn't happen every once in a while. But if that's their constant, then, there's something going on there that's not working.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So, write kids. Write kids well and ask for help to do it if you do not have kids in your life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right on, Val.
Yeah, I like that, Val. She says good things.
She says really good things.
She has good words.
Mm-hmm.
Really good words. Yeah.
We really do.
We really, yeah.
Okay. We can, right? All right, March 14th, Fiona Zetti joined us.
Hi, Fiona.
There's such a great photo of her. She's in Kara's Books and More, which is in Atlanta. And I have actually had the great privilege of going to an event at Kara's back in the day when GCLS was in Atlanta for a few years. They're a great bookstore, and they're one of the few independent feminist bookstores that is still in operation and still going strong, still doing events. And I love that Fiona is doing huge shout outs to them.
Yay, Fiona. This is, again, just a further extension of the awesome of Fiona Zetti. I mean, really.
Really. I mean, really. Plus, Karis Books, friends, if you are in the Atlanta area, it's an institution. You have to go. Find it. Get your mapping app out if you're not comfortable with, the old school ways. And freaking go and spend some time there. It's a great welcoming space. And for someone like me who grew up when there were a lot more of these bricks and mortar spaces, it's sort of like a memory lane. It's like total nostalgia. I'll go into a place like this and I'm like, oh my God, it's taking me back, because this is where, before the internet, where we went to get information about the community, to meet people, to get the latest books. I mean, this is where we did this. Mm-hmm. Now it's like everything, you can just like order shit from Amazon. Well, don't. Maybe go support your local bookstores like this and go buy a book and hang out with them. Bring them coffee.
There's an idea.
Right? That should be a thing. You know, there's an independent bookseller's day. There should also be a take coffee to your independent bookseller's day. Don't you think?
Yes. But before you do that, you should make sure they like coffee.
Okay. Donuts. Just,
take concessions. Take snacks. Take something awesome. Yeah.
So, Fiona makes another really good point. She says that once I started my career as a writer, I realized there was another important role of Karis and other independent bookstores. Even though, while working at the store, she worked there, I often, quote, hand-sold titles to customers looking for their next read. I didn't know at the time how valuable that was to an author. When someone knows and loves your novels and they work in a bookstore, they will tell every customer how amazing they think your books are. Multiply that one passionate reader bookseller by hundreds and thousands, and you can see how crucial it is to have that intimate connection.
Yeah.
right? That's something that you don't really necessarily get online, of course. You don't get like the seller going, oh my God, if you like this author, you should totally try this one. Now, Amazon tries with its algorithms, but there's something a lot different about a person in real life telling you about this.
Oh, absolutely. And we all still search for it online. That's why, you know, sites like Goodreads exist. And every single thing that you can ever have, you know, pay for as a consumer has a review site, because we want those recommendations. We're trying to figure out how to make that connection, but those reviews fall short.
And well, unless you know the reviewer, exactly. Like that's something.
Yeah.
Let's do a little shout out here to the Lesbian Review site, because that's a small group of reviewers who have built up a following. And if you enjoy their reviews, and they have different people who review different things, and you trust that reviewer, you're going to go to that reviewer and look and see what they think about a book.
Yeah. So, but that again, that's like you're talking to a friend because they've taken the time to become a part of the community. It's not just random review on a generic site that you where you don't know anybody. Because that's why that recommendation in a bookstore is worth so much. Even if you've never met that bookseller before, you feel that sense of connection because they're talking to you and you can feel their excitement and their passion.
Exactly. And so there's something to be said for the bricks and mortar stores, your friendly neighborhood bookstores. And that's why I think it's so important, friends, to, if you can, if you are able, to please go and buy books from your indie booksellers.
Don't you think
that
indie bookstores are gonna be, you know, hit an upswing here again? Because I think some kind of are.
I do see that happening because, and maybe this is just my old self being like, aha, kids that I. But I get the feeling that people are looking once again, finally, for a more human connection. You know what I'm saying?
And yeah, so, absolutely. Sure,
go to Amazon, Barnes and Noble sites and, you know, order a book. But I mean, and Joe, if you know this, go to like fucking Powell's Books in Portland and that place is always packed.
Yeah.
It's always packed because it's not just about the books. And there are gajillions of books in that store. It's like fucking four stories of books, new and used. It's about the community of people who engage in reading and in books. And that is anybody and everybody. You see the most interesting people at Powell's, and they're not just like hanging out looking at books, they're like talking to each other, like really different people. And that is what is so cool about a bookstore. And because we are human, there's something really so much more incredible about a connection in real life than a connection online, which is not to say that you can't find valuable connections online. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that these are two different things, and I think people should have both in their lives.
Yeah. Oh, the internet is amazing. It's made the world so much smaller and more accessible. Definitely. Not trying to minimize that, but that's... Yeah. A bookstore is a whole different experience. You get to smell the books. You get to
right.
I love the smell of books. It's like the smell of a new baby. Like it's intoxicating.
Well, the smell of books in general, like libraries, have that smell too. You know, I just I love that. And also, Fiona, shout out to Karis Books, which will be celebrating its 45th year in business, friends. 45 years. It's moving to a new location in April, and it's having a big party. So if you are in the Atlanta area and you want to go check this out, go to the Karis Books website, and I will supply that for you in our write-up. I don't have it at hand. I'm sure it's something really esoteric like KarisBooks.com, but let's have a look. KarisBooksAndMore.com.
Oh.
So check it out. See if you can attend that event because it's so worth it.
Yeah,
it is so worth
it. I'm kind of jealous right now that I am here and it is there.
I know, right? But so they're moving in April. And Fiona posted photos of, you know, where it used to be, the three physical spaces of Karis Books. I went to Karis when it was at the middle photo, when it was in that old house that was painted purple. Now they're moving to a different old house, which is so cool. I love bookstores in houses.
Yeah, it's
in
fun.
In old houses. That's like such a great space. And not only that, but it makes it feel all the more like community, you mm-hmm. know? And this new space, friends, has a porch, and I'm really hoping they put a table and chairs out on there.
Oh, they have to. And a porch swing. Or a porch, yeah. A porch sofa.
Something. Something. You know, this is Atlanta. You can, like, kind of pretty much be outside for a lot of the year. So, anyway. Cool! Thank you, Fiona, for that walk down memory lane.
Yeah.
God, I love bookstores. Yeah. Holy shit.
Nostalgia.
All right. March 15th, my friends, the Ides of March. Guess what I remember to do, Joe?
What did you remember to do?
I remember to do the book list.
Yay!
Woohoo!
I love Yahoo, it when you do that. Yo.
I know, right? There have been times when it's been like coming up on the end of the month. I'm like, oh, shit. Mm-hmm. Forgot to do the book list. Anyway, the way this works, friends, is every month we put up, you know, forthcoming for the next month and add to the current month because, you know, when I put these lists up originally, obviously books are published after I actually post the list, so I have to add to the list. Fortunately, it's really easy for me to do that. I mean, literally, it takes like 10 seconds.
It takes but longer than takes 10 seconds.
Okay, maybe 15 for me to just like add one. You know, it's just like type in, link, update, done.
Yeah. Well, and you are a natural, like you instinctually, you are a researcher. That is how your mind works. For me, I am not. I'm not a researcher. It would take me a lot longer than 10 seconds.
No, I'm just saying that when somebody sends me, hey, I need you to put this on the list. Yeah, that's how long it takes me. Sure, no problem. Boom, done. But when I put the list together, friends, it does take a little bit longer. Trust me on that. At any point, we have the list up, but you can still participate in it if you have a book coming out in March or April. All you have to do is drop us a line at the contact page.
Yes, do that.
And yeah, and just say, please add to the book list so that I know what you want me to do, because otherwise I'm like, what the hell? And we get confused here at Women in Words.
I spend a lot of time in my life saying, what the hell?
Exactly. Lot. So tell us, you know, what it's about, add book to book list, and then this is all I need. This is all I need. I need the author, the title, and a link to buy it. That's, mm-hmm. or for more info, if the buy link isn't up yet, that's it. I don't need a synopsis. I don't need a copy of the book. I just need those three little things. So it's easy on you, easy on me, boom, done, yay.
Yeah, so there.
Woo! So anyway, the books are up. Go get yourself some spring reading or some fall reading, depending on what hemisphere you're in.
Yeah.
All right, my friends. And then also on the 15th, it was my day. It's my day. And I did a Fangirl Friday on how important representation in media is, specifically everybody's sadness and horror at Netflix's cancellation of One Day at a Time.
How is that even possible? That show is so funny and well written and well acted, and it's just the writers on that show are so good.
Right?
Yeah. So good.
Twitter blew up about this, you know. Netflix was all, and it felt disingenuous, their statement about how, oh, representation is so important, blah blah blah, and then they canceled the show, which has so much representation, you know, like it's got, you know, Latinx representation, queer representation. And one of the things I love, the other things that I love about the show is that it dealt with PTSD with women veterans. Mm-hmm. You don't see that in shows.
Yeah. I love the talk therapy that they do, their support group.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh my God. And then they kind of like riff off each other. Oh my God. And a lot of those women are women of color in that support group.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, it's just so great. Well, anyway, Netflix got hammered, rightfully so, on social media, and then Netflix was claiming that there weren't not enough people watched to justify another season. Now, let me just say something about that. Nobody fucking knows how many people watch Netflix shows because they don't ever release the information. And it's a streaming service, so it's really difficult to figure out how many people are actually watching it. At least it seems that it would be. The other thing that really pisses me off about this is Netflix spent literally no time, no energy on advertising One Day at a Time. Mm-hmm. If you recall, the Umbrella Academy, they had shit tons of advertisement for that, and yet none for One Day at a Time.
Yeah.
You know, here's this show, they're talking about, oh, it's great representation. They never fucking advertised it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the other thing that really pisses me off about this is I think Netflix, one of the reasons that they jettisoned it is because it's not an original Netflix production. It's produced by Sony, and so Netflix was like paying Sony to have it on their platform like they do with a lot of things. And I think Netflix, what they're trying to do is basically create a platform that is mostly their own stuff so they don't have to pay people to have it on their platform. Okay.
Yeah.
So I think there's that involved in this decision too, but I also think that they're just being douchey because, I mean, come on. It's a show that they're not even spending money to produce. And you've seen the set. It's like, how hard?
Yeah, it's incredibly simple. There's not.
You know, I get why Sense 8 was so expensive to produce.
Yes.
Because they were actually on location all around the world.
Yes.
You know, they were fucking in South Africa. They were in Norway or wherever.
Yeah. Well,
this is like a set that looks like an apartment. That's it, you know?
Yeah. Well, and you know, the Wachowskis don't do anything by halves, right? So, of course, you know, Sense 8 was expensive. But right. But this is incredibly straightforward. It's just good comedy. It's so good, the writing.
and it's not just the comedy, it's the issues that they tackle.
Yeah, oh, yeah, no, they deal with real life issues, but they deal with it in very serious ways that are you're able to laugh at. And I'm sorry, but comedy, being able to laugh at something is often the best ways to cope with something.
Right, right. Yeah.
And I love the fact that they've got this, you know, this privileged white dude running around who's trying so hard to acknowledge his privilege.
Be woke.
Trying so hard and screwing it up, but he's willing to listen to why he's screwing it up. And
I love that.
Which is, I think that's important. Like, we need to have, you know, those white guys, middle-aged white guys who are trying but getting it wrong regardless, but we still have to give them credit because they're trying, goddammit. And, you know, it's hard. It's hard to recognize somebody else's struggle.
One of the things that in season one, and the guy Schneider, friends, one of the things that I just, you know, I think that really, really captured his character was when, you know, there was the coming out quinceañera kind of thing. And the dad was being such a douche, being homophobic, and Schneider stepped in to be the dad.
Yeah.
That was when you realize that here's a guy who he cares about these people, he loves them, and he knows he fucks up, like you say, but he's going to be there for you when you need him.
He's trying.
He's trying.
He makes all sorts of mistakes, but he's trying, by God.
But you see his facial expressions when they call him out. He's like, oh my God, you're right.
I am that guy. Like, you know,
I am that guy.
Gentrification, you know, things like, you're like, wait a minute, what? That's terrible. Oh, wait, I'm doing that? Yeah, yeah, you're doing that. Yeah.
So I love that. I mean, there's so many lessons you can take from this show. And I have some hope that another network or platform will pick it up. I mean, Brooklyn Nine-Nine got picked up after they got jettisoned from, I think it was from Fox, and now they're with NBC. So I have some hope that, you know, it could happen. That's One Day at a Time could rise from the ashes.
This version, I think, is, and I loved the original, but this is so, I think this is better than the original. Such good acting, such good writing.
Right. All right. Now, friends, for the other update on shows that are such good writing, representation, and awesomeness, we are still waiting to find out what is actually going to happen with Wynonna Earp. This all started when, sometime around February 21st, a fan checked in with actress Melanie Scrofano, who plays Wynonna Earp, because this fan was concerned that shooting on season 4, which is a go, had not started yet. And Melanie's response was that she did not know. At that point, showrunner Emily Andras, who is not a shrinking violet, if you will, on Twitter, was started commenting as well that things were kind of problematic right now. And what's happening is the company that produces the show, IDW Entertainment, is broke. Okay, that's the official word. They went through a leadership change and they have no money. And so even though Sci-Fi, the platform that airs Wynonna Earp, has signed for two more seasons, season 4 and season 5, IDW has no money to produce the show.
Wow.
So that's where we're at right now. Now, I know IDW is probably looking for said money, but in the meantime, Earpers, God love them, have launched literally a global campaign, because this show has fans worldwide. And part of that, and one of the hashtags for that, is Fight for Wynonna. Several fans have somehow managed to put up billboards in Times Square and in Los Angeles. And Emily Andras and Melanie Scrofano were so moved by this, they put up their own billboard. Thank you, Earpers.
Aww.
This is going on in Times Square, friends. This is the love that people have for this show. This is the fandom. So, you know, I'm still waiting. I haven't found it yet. I'm waiting for a GoFundMe for
right?
people to like sell funding for Wynonna Earp. And maybe there's something going on that I don't know about. But I'm pretty sure if somebody put up a GoFundMe that said we need like $5 million to fund Wynonna Earp, that it would freaking get done.
Mm-hmm.
It would get done in like, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, because this is a worldwide phenomenon. So IDW released the statement February 22nd, you know, they're working on details for how the story will continue. They'll share new details very soon. That was like a month ago. We're still waiting. So, I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen there. And I'm really kind of freaking out a little bit, because it's a great show, another great show, but I guess we'll just have to wait and see. Maybe there'll be news at Klexicon. I don't know. Anyway, one of the things that I found was there's a pretty well-known TV critic and reporter guy named Ryan McGee, and he does a lot of work at Rolling Stone and the like. And I follow him because he has some really spot-on stuff with regard to media, and he did this really awesome thread on Twitter. And in this thread, he said, "The eye-opening part of both One Day at a Time and Wynonna Earp for me has always been seeing how vital it is for people not used to seeing their experiences on screen. Mm-hmm. The show's quality isn't unimportant, but it's almost secondary. I can't and won't attempt to articulate that value for these people, but I've seen it, and it made me rethink everything I've ever taken for granted about a pop culture landscape essentially entirely directed at me, i.e. a white straight male. Everyone should have shows that speak directly to them, but it's woefully clear that it's not true for a ton of people, and any show that can serve that often ignored audience is fucking amazing. I first realized this post-Klexa on the 100, and it's something I've tried to take seriously ever since. This isn't being woke, it's just common sense compassion. In conclusion, these shows aren't about me, but they have forged a better me. So thanks to them for that gift."
Oh, snap! That's good.
I mean,
that's good. I approve that message.
And that's, you know, obviously the shows are important to people like us who don't, you know, the queer rep, the women rep, and for people of color who don't have that reps, and then they get it in shows like this. But for a guy like this, a white guy, he gets it now. He sees why that's important. It's not about him. But he loves the shows anyway and appreciates them because they open his eyes to experience. And that's also why shows like this are important. You know, all these whiners, you know, it's just another black show or no, blah, blah, blah. Well, guess what? It could be a show for you too.
Mm-hmm.
It can make you a better person too.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So anyway,
fucking let
anyway,
it happen.
We shall. Exactly. So we'll see what happens. You know, hopefully One Day at a Time we'll get picked up somewhere else. And hopefully Wynonna will continue, and if not, hopefully it'll get a new platform. I don't know what's going to happen with that, but It's a little anxiety making for the fandoms right now.
Yeah. I love One Day at a Time. I'm very, very sad. But you know what is coming out? Season 3 of Into the Badlands is coming out soon.
Oh my God, yeah. When is that? When is that?
I don't know, but I've seen a ton of promo on it, so it's got to be soon.
Right?
Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah.
Let me see.
And I'm just madly in love with The Widow.
Yeah, that show is fucking amazing. Okay, yes. Let me see. Oh, shit, it returns March 24th.
Oh, yes! I don't know why I'm so excited about it, because I don't have... What channel is it on? It's on AMC, or what is it on? AMC? Yeah, I don't have AMC.
Yes.
Yeah, but I don't have that. I have to pay Amazon to watch it. I do. Free time.
Hey, man, you know, yeah. It's worth it. No commercials. I'm just fucking saying.
Yeah.
It's good. Also, while we're on the subject of pop culture, I wanted to draw people's attention to an Indiegogo campaign that is in conjunction with Tello Films. That is the queer women's, movie and streaming content site, because they put out a call last fall for scripts for a queer romantic comedy holiday season. In other words, our very own Hallmark movies that are not Hallmark movies, but queer mark movies, right? And they got 3 scripts. So they're raising money for the first one. Mm-hmm. It's called Season of Love, Queer Holiday Rom-Com. And if you go to Indiegogo, and I'm going to put this link up because this is a worthy project for funding. The trailer or the explanation of what this movie is about, and the two or three of the main characters appear in this little kind of explainer video. And friends, one of them is deaf. A deaf woman is playing one of the main characters.
Nice.
That kind of representation is so necessary and so needed, especially in queer spaces, not just in mainstream spaces. So please, if you can, support this project financially. If you can't do that, that's fine. Share it far and wide so that we can get the backing for mm-hmm. this particular holiday rom-com.
Yes.
Okay? Yes. So I'll provide that link for you. Again, it's called A Season of Love, and it's Tello. Tello Films is doing it.
Awesome. Yeah! I, too, have an update.
Sweet!
Leading into Christmas, I was talking about all the things that we can do to, you know, help people around the world who maybe just need a little bit extra, and or not even extra, just a little bit to get up to normal, right? So if you remember, I told everybody about Kiva.org, yeah. which does microloans, and mm-hmm. I'm getting ready to do another because it's such a great, great, great program. But you can go out and you can pick out who you want to loan money to, and, you know, their loan is for much larger amounts, but as an individual, you can contribute. Right. A $25 block. And mm-hmm. I've done 2. And so far, the one person is 33% repaid. And the second one is 17% repaid. So it's happening, is what I'm saying, is that this program works. Not that getting repaid is the important part, because frankly, it's not. But the fact that, this is a way to give people access to a real life solution and to empower them. So if you're into that, I'm not giving you a whole lot of information about it, but if you're into it, go check out kiva.org, because it's amazing. kiva.org. Yeah.
That is awesome. Thanks for the reminder.
And
yes.
Well, what were you going to say? Maybe you were going to say something more interesting.
Klexicon.
That's interesting.
April 11th. It starts. It's in Las Vegas, and you can find out more information, friends, at klexicon.com. And I will be there repping for anybody and everybody at Dirt Road Books. So, so come and find me, friends, and chit chat. We'll talk books. We'll talk fangirling. We'll talk whatever the hell. I'm also doing several panels, so I'll be around. And hopefully you'll be able to find me if you want to. I don't know. Maybe you don't care. Whatever. That's fine too.
Yeah. Okay.
You had something else?
I did. Dear listener, at Women in Words, we have this cool little program where we will advertise whatever it is that you want to advertise, and we charge you $5 for 30 days. And it's often longer than 30 days because, let's face it, I'm very bad at like keeping track of things like days. But I'm actually not asking for your money at this point. What I'm going to point out is that if you have an event that is of benefit to the queer community, or if you have an anthology that is intended to be, or the, not is intended to be, but is the proceeds are going to charity, we will very, very happily put those up on the advertising for free if you let me know what's going on with that. So, we've got our happy hours up there. Because that's, it's a charity base. And I've had that ad up there for off and on for a long time, never once charged them for it. So, or at least I don't think I have. If I have, you get a refund. Just tell me. Oh, I don't know. I'm pretty sure I haven't. I'm having a moment where I'm going, did I once? I don't know. I don't think so. Because two or three people have come to me and said, hey, can we put this up? And so I've put it up. And I've taken it down, and I've put it up, and I've taken it down. We've also got Learning Curve up there because that one is a charity based, And then the Black Women Writing in the South from October 10th through the 13th, which is a community writing event. So anything like that, please, 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 please let me know. I will very happily put your ad up there. Very happily.
Yay! All right. I think that's all our updates, Joe.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's it.
Well, I have one more thing to say, friends, on a more serious note. I just wanted to let all our Aussie and Kiwi friends know that we are thinking about you and sending you a lot of love and light, and all our Muslim friends as well. We are thinking about you and sending lots of love and light, and we need a lot more of that. But anyway, just... That's just what I wanted to let y'all know. So,
yeah.
Now, okay.
Okay. And on that somber but necessary note, dear listener, this has been the Week in Review for Women in Words. Thank you for listening. I am Jove Bell here with Andy Marquette. You can find us online at womenwords.org. And please like, subscribe, leave a rating, leave a review, do all of those things, hit all those magical buttons and help other lesbians of the internet to find us. And until next week, thanks for listening.